Working Cows Podcast, Episode 29.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. This is Clay Connery from the Working Cows Podcast, your host, and I am excited to introduce to you today my first repeat guest, and that is Dallas Mount. He is an extension educator in Wyoming, as well as an instructor with Ranch Management Consultants for their Ranching for Profit School, and he also is one of the instructors in the High Plains Ranch Practicum. He, along with Aaron Berger, Dallas's previous episode was episode 2, so workingcows.net/2, if you want to check that out. Aaron's previous episode was workingcows.net/6, if you want to check that out. Had a great conversation with him about cow depreciation, which has been a constant consideration around our place. So, without any further ado, I will get you into this discussion with Dallas Mount. We are talking with him about his recent trip to Australia and some of the challenges to his paradigm and the things that he learned while he was there. Dallas, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you back as my first repeat guest. So, I think when we first recorded, I was a little bit nervous and I was trying to wrap my head around how these things should go, and I didn't give you the full credit you deserve for inspiring this deal. So, first of all, thank you for that. It's been a great journey and gotten to talk to a lot of people that I probably wouldn't have been motivated to call and say, hey, can we sit down and talk for a while without you originally planting the seed. So thanks for that.
Yeah, you bet, Clay. It's an honor. I'm probably the number one fan of the Working Cows Podcast. It's right on the top of my podcast aggregator, and oftentimes listen to it as we travel, and the kids are like, oh, Dad, that's that cow show again you're going to make us listen to. So anyway, I'm a big fan. So credit to you for sticking with it, for keeping the episodes going. Man, there's been some awesome guests and some interesting conversations. So thanks for letting me sit in on them.
Sure. No, it's been great. And, you know, I guess in my mind, the best is yet to come. And that's not to say anything about the guests that we've had on, you know, some of them coming back again for a second time, and some other guests that I've gotten in touch with for the first time. So I'm really excited about the future as well. So
cool.
Speaking of travel, you just did some traveling and were in Australia for 4 months. How long was it?
We were in country for 3 months, for 90 days.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And what was the purpose of that trip?
Yeah. So my family and I we're not much in travelers. I mean, you know, we'll take a weekend here, or a few days there, and go places usually with a day's driving distance. So this was quite a stretch for us. As a university employee, you know, at academic level, I'm eligible for a sabbatical or extended professional development leave. So a year ago, I put in for this, and I was able to get a six-month leave. And so that's happening right now. Started in January, and it goes through June. And with that, you make a study plan, you study something, and it usually involves a trip somewhere and getting out of your element. And the idea is to take somebody mid-career and broaden their horizons, give them new perspective, allow them the opportunity to refresh, and then come back and use that in their work. So so I put together a plan to go to Australia and find folks that were doing outstanding education with ranchers, see what kind of things they were doing, learn how their teaching methods. And then secondly, I wanted to get on some stations, see some properties, see how ranching's done over there, and I was able to accomplish all that. It was just an outstanding time. I worked with two organizations primarily, RCS. You had David McLean on a few weeks ago. David's mm-hmm. general manager of RCS. RCS is very similar to the Ranching for Profit organization here. They're sister companies, no financial connection, but they both do similar things, have similar origins. So RCS was a wonderful host for me. They were the main organization that hosted me there. And then I was lucky enough to work with another group called KLR Marketing. And three ranchers that started it, last names of K, L, and R. And they came over here and spent time with Bud Williams, learned from Bud Williams, and got excited about the marketing stuff that Bud was teaching and wanted to take that back to Australia. And these guys have done an outstanding job of putting together a world-class curriculum on the Bud Williams marketing concepts, and also have a group of alumni that keep up with them. And one of the interesting things is all three of these guys are involved in production agriculture and also do the KLR Marketing School. So those were my two host organizations, and then the rest of the time I was there, we spent time going and seeing different places. You know, we got from Queensland to New South Wales. It's kind of like saying from Montana to Texas when we come here. So a big difference in production environments, and a lot of miles or kilometers or Ks, as they call them, driven around the country. So it was an amazing trip.
Yeah, thanks for setting that David McLean interview up. There were only a couple of times where I had to stop him and ask him, okay, are you saying this because you're speaking a different language? So he talked about stud producers, and I figured that was seed stock. And then the other thing I mentioned the day I released that episode on Facebook, I mentioned that our guest today would call this mustering the paddock.
I saw that, yeah. I really enjoyed learning the different language that they use for things. And so listening to that interview with him was it was hit like just a few days after I'd come back. So it was,
right.
I had a smile on my face the whole time he was talking, just you know, listening to the accent and all the language that they use for things. It's a wonderful culture and experience being there.
Yeah. So why Australia? What drew you to set up your sabbatical there?
You know, I probably don't have a really good reason, other than I've always been interested in it. For one thing, they speak English, and that made it easy, right? At least some version of English, we could say. And then probably the main reason is the connection with RCS. I'd met Terry McCosker before. I'd been watching on the internet the things RCS was doing, and I had those contacts there. And I really wanted to see ranching in a different environment from what we do. I mean, you know, you could go to some place in the world at similar latitudes that we are, but I thought it'd be better to go see something as different as I could see it. So I thought Northern Australia would be cool, and it was. So, but mainly the connection with RCS, and then I'd also been in contact with Graham Reese with KLR through some other things, and so had a little bit of a contact there as well. So those just
sure.
happened to grow.
Yeah. You mentioned that part of the purpose of these trips is to get you out of your element. So how far out of your element would you say you were?
If you look at the latitudes as to where we were, our base in Yeppoon, which is a town near Rockhampton. Rockhampton's the larger town that some of us might be aware of. If you flipped it inversely, it's about the same as South Cuba. It's further south than anything in the continental U.S. And that's kind of where we started. And then we went north from there in Australia, which would be like going further south in the northern hemisphere. So it was really a tropical area that had, you know, lots of heat. Lots of sunshine, not really any winter to speak of, but then extreme variations in terms of climate variations, and that was one of the interesting things to see. And then Brahman cattle, you know, I've been to Texas a few times on some different trips and seen some Brahman cattle, but never to the extent that we encountered there. So the Brahman cattle and extensive ranching environment. You know, I heard David talk about ranching in the north in Australia and the territories in northern Queensland. You get into some extremely extensive environments that are broader scale than things we think about here. You know, at ranching in Wyoming, we think, well, we know from big ranches, right? Well, we don't know squat, right? those guys have some enormous country. One of the things that really that opened my eyes to it is I was with a fellow by the name of Jim Lindsay. Jim's an amazing guy. I'm going to tell you about him as the interview goes on. We're flying in his plane. We're flying in his 182. We're going from Long Reach to Hughenden, climbed up pretty high. There were some cloud layers going on that day, so we went and decided to fly above them. And I think we were 8,000 feet or so, and Jim looks over at me and says, "Are you bothered by the altitude?" I said, "No, it's fine." But we were up that high, and we were looking down, and we're talking about the landscape. And I said, well, there's a headquarters, a station headquarters. And he said, "Oh, yeah, there it is." And he knew whose name it was. And I said, "Where's the next one?" And I'm looking around from 8,000 feet above the ground, and you can't see it. So he's like, "Oh, yeah, we got to fly for a ways longer before we'll be able to see the next one." So,
oh, wow.
I mean, you're talking, you know, in our scale, 100 miles between places would not be unusual there. And it's, you know, the roads are pretty poor quality, very similar to our a county road would be similar to one of our ranch two tracks. It's kind of what it would be. So traveling 100 miles on that to go visit your neighbor, it turns into quite a trip.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting thing, is just the scale and the ability that they have to spread that overhead out over a lot more head of cattle, because it's not just more acres that they're running on. They tend to be, the average size of a ranch there seems to be quite a bit bigger than the average size of a ranch here in the States.
It is, yeah, the number of head they run and the overheads. And I guess I assume that's where our conversations go, is to talk about what kind of things ranchers here can learn from what I saw and those things. So if I can jump in with that, I think that to me is the number one thing that really hit me upside the head is the scale and the amount of overheads. So let's talk about Jim Lindsay some more. I spent 3 days with him on his ranch south of Hughenden, in central Queensland, inland a little bit. So if you want to Google it, the town is Hughenden, H-U-G-H-E-N-D-E-N. So Hughenden, Queensland. And so we're on his place, and he's talking about, what he's done over the course of the years. And he put this place together, and there's two stations there that are put together by Jim primarily. And he was saying, well, 7 years ago, we had 6,000 head here. And I said, well, what do you have now? And I think it was like 150 cows. And I said, well, what in the heck's going on? And he said, well, we've been in drought for 6 years. So almost fully destocked. And these 150 cows are kind of his, he's got a Brahman breeding herd, or stud herd, as they would call it, that he sells some bulls out of. And these 150 were out on adjustment. He'd send them out to somebody else to take care of for a time period. So he had been completely destocked for some time. And so we're looking at this ranch, and he's talking about, you know, the running the yearlings and running the cows and being fully stocked. And we saw pictures of it when it was, the grass was before the drought, and it looked like the Flint Hills of Kansas. I mean, grass up to your waist, thick, lush, beautiful green grass. And when I was seeing it, it was almost like a desert. There was big spaces in between plants. There were paddocks, their word for pastures. There were paddocks we drove through that I don't think could have kept one head alive for very long. Mm. I mean, there was essentially no grass out there. And the place had been destocked for 6 years. So back to the overheads. We walked out. He was doing something, and he asked me to run down and get the pickup, or the ute, as they call it, out of the shed. And so I went down and jumped in the ute. And as I'm in the shed, I'm looking around, and I thought, there's just not a lot of stuff in here. So it's essentially an open-face machine shed. There's the typical ranch tools, from chainsaws to four-wheelers to, a good supply of tools, but there's not the stuff that you would expect in an American ranch. It wasn't a whole pile of tractors laying around. And you think about a ranch that runs 6,000 head, the types of things you would expect to see with that. The level of machinery, the number of machine sheds, it would generally be a start of it. The number of people that would be involved with running an outfit that size, And I'm looking at what Jim's doing, and it's he, and on the station 20 miles away, it's his daughter and son-in-law, and it's Jim and his wife. So there's the four of them, and just not a lot of stuff, not a lot of things to break down, not a lot of things to have to keep running. Just really keep the idea of ranching very simple and let nature do what nature does well. Help her out along where you can, but let's not overcomplicate it. And I think that's something the Australians do really well, especially, and I'm talking in the northern part where they have the scale. When you get down into the southern part, the operations become smaller size, more similar to what we experience here. So I think the idea of keeping overheads low, letting the animals be animals, letting Mother Nature take care of it, and then that drought resiliency is really the second thing that really hit me pretty hard there.
So they're doing, those things with basically four full-time labor units. Are there some things that they're doing that are helping with that? Or when they restock, will they bring back more labor to the place? Or are there some things that they're doing that are saving them some labor that you were seeing?
Yeah, I never really heard him talk about having additional labor when they were fully stocked. I didn't really ask, to be honest, and I did see it in a destocked setting. So, I'm guessing here. And I would say it's less than four full-time labor units. Jim's got a lot of things that he's involved in, from KLR marketing to low-stress stockmanship schools. His wife has quite a few interests off the place. And so his son-in-law is really the one, and daughter as well, is really the one there day-to-day doing most of the things. So it's probably not four full-time units. When they're fully stocked, I'm not exactly sure what they're at. I didn't see housing for outside help. That it looked like it's set up pretty much just for them, even when they're fully stocked. I think it's just a matter of they do run things extensively. On Jim's place, there's two kind of primary places. One is set up in a cell grazing where the animals are moved every few days, and the other one is set up in more of a set stocking way where they just put the animals in there and gather them maybe once or twice a season and do what they need to do with them. So there is a lot of country where the animals really are just kind of run out, and it's survival of the fittest. You can call it the Christopher Columbus style of ranching, where you go and discover them every year and see what you have. But that's not the case for everybody, but there are quite a few operations that do turn the animals into the pasture, and you come in there and you gather them once a year, and you wean what you're going to wean, you sell what seems to be open, and you keep doing it again. So, the low production, low overhead model is still going on there to a fairly large degree, especially in the north.
Sure. We're going to take a quick break and thank our sponsors, then we'll come back for more with Dallas Mount, recently returned from Australia. This is Clay Connery again on behalf of the High Plains Ranch Practicum. I just spoke to Dallas Mount. We have an episode coming up with him in a week or so, but I wanted to let you know that they're getting filled up on their classes, and I want to challenge somebody from South Dakota to be a part of that class if there isn't already a member of the class that's going to be from South Dakota. You may be thinking that's a long drive. Well, I can guarantee you that the High Plains Ranch Practicum is worth the drive. I can also recommend a very awesome Airbnb with four beers on tap included in the cost of the rental of the Airbnb. So hpranchpracticum.com, go check it out and register soon before they fill up. We're back here with Dallas Mount. He just returned from a sabbatical trip to Australia, and we've been talking a little bit about some of the things that he saw there that were intriguing to him. And the first thing that we kind of touched on were overheads. What else was there as far as practices, or was it more similar than it was different, or were there some other things that really stuck out to you as far as things that we can bring here to the States and help with the way that we're managing our ranch businesses?
There's a lot of differences in the day-to-day way that they work cattle and things that they do, but in the big picture, when you step back and look at a ranch strategically and from a higher level, the issues are all the same. The things that Australian ranchers struggle with are They're really good at production, and they're generally not very good at economics and finance and people management. So does that sound familiar?
Sounds familiar, yeah.
You know, succession, big issue in Australia. We talk about it a lot, you know, in terms of who's going to get what and who is going to control what and how's the decision-making authority being passed down. How are we training the younger generation to be competent to take over? So, you know, all those kind of things are the same. But the way that they work cattle is quite a bit different. Now, granted, my experience is in the western part of the U.S., and, you know, generally horseback kind of outfits or places that use four-wheelers in combination with horses. And just I'm sure as you travel across the U.S., you'd find big differences here as well in the way that we work cattle and the way things are done. My family and I went and spent 3 days on Basalt River Station, which is north of Charters Towers area, about 3.5 hours of dirt road to get back into this place, which is not considered very remote, by the way. So we went back in there and spent some time with them, and super nice family. They were awesome, a whole lot of fun, and they had organized a muster and a branding for our visit. So we got to be involved in the muster or the gather of the cattle and then branding the calves. So the way that the muster worked, and this is pretty typical of the larger places with some brush, is generally everybody has a neighbor that has a helicopter, right? So that's not the way it is in South Dakota, Clay.
No.
So they generally call the neighbor up and say, hey, this is the paddock we're going to muster. We'd like you to bring them to this bore or well or maybe a big storage tank, so somewhere that's prominent. So the person in the helicopter will gather the animals out of the brush, drive them towards whatever that agreed upon location is. On the ground will be the crew and this crew is all on motorbikes and four wheelers. And a lot of the ranches are set up where the paddocks or pastures come together in a lane. And then the lane is oftentimes, I mean, you know, I think of a lane as being 50 yards wide. These lanes are maybe 300 yards wide. And these lanes run up connecting all these paddocks together, and they take the animals to a set of yards or working facilities. So once the helicopter got them gathered, we got behind them on the bikes and took them to the working facilities, put them in the yards. And then the next thing that was interesting is they run the animals through what they call a race draft. Okay, so a race is what we'd call an alley. So they run them down the race, and then at the end of the race is a set of drafting gates. And the way this works is a guy stands on an elevated platform, and he runs a series of levers. And this one happened to sort the animals five ways. So he could, you know, push one lever, and it would open this gate, and they'd go there. There's others that are set up on hydraulics with remotes even that people can carry around and run the race or the race draft by that.
I think you posted a video of that, right, on Facebook of somebody operating.
I think I did. Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, so they run these the whole mob or the herd. They put them in here and they run them down the race. Calves, cows, bulls. They call them strangers or neighbors' cattle. dries, wets, and so a couple of people are watching them run down through the race and they're calling out dries, and so they're sorting cows from calves this way. You know, in my neighborhood, running calves and cows down an alley together is kind of a recipe for a disaster. I tell you, these Brahmin calves are tough little boogers because they just get run right over by these cows and stand back up and keep going. So they get everything sorted, and that took, you know, a couple hours. I think there was 1,400 head in the mob. Mm. So they sorted them all in a couple hours. And then we started working calves, and they do everything through a table, really well set up table. You know, it lays over nice if you work it at waist height. And these calves were anywhere from fairly newborns to 300-pound calves. So there was a pretty good swath in among the calves. And so for the next two half days or a full day of work, essentially, we branded 700 calves with about four people working. So they really got through them fairly quick. Some interesting things with that is the way they castrated, did it with a knife, but, you know, they usually cut the bottom of the sack off and then pop the nuts out and kind of work them and peel them out. They would actually put the nuts between the fingers, do two cuts, one cut on each nut. And the guy castrating was just phenomenally fast at it. And no vaccinations were given. They dehorned with a knife. The guy on the dehorning knife just went about as fast as this. Catch the calf, lay it on its side. Guy walks up, zip, zip. He's got him dehorned. The guy's already done castrating. The guy that was castrating reaches back, grabs a branding iron, puts one brand on, puts a second brand on. The calf is set up and released. And that's about as fast as it took to process a calf. So they really went through them fairly quickly.
Were they just cutting the testicle then and leaving it on? They weren't cutting it off?
Or? No, they were cutting it off, but he puts them through his fingers and he pops the scrotum open right over the top of each one and then pulls it out through there. But I thought it was interesting the way they did two cuts for him.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
So one,
two cuts in the scrotum.
Yeah, one cut for each nut. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, just different ways to do a thing. He's like, well, how do you do it? You know, so I'm like, well, let me show you. So we look at, and I'm sitting there working and working, and he could have done five by the time I did one, you know. But, you know, it was fun to share some of those things. Just some interesting things about the Stockman. They carry bull straps. Generally, the jackaroos is what they would call a cowboy or a buckaroo. The jackaroos wear these belts that are a bull strap, and they can use them to either hobble something or they could put it on the flank of a bull and tie it down. Just some kind of interesting different work wear that you would see. It's very common to see the ranchers in shorts, where that doesn't happen out here very often. But they'll often wear shorts, and then some of them wear kind of gaiters that go over their work boots for walking through the grass and those kind of things. So, But yeah, the people were super nice. Of course you get out in the rural and that tends to be the case here too, very welcoming and man, we just had a blast.
Whenever anyone talks about how nice Canadians are, I'm like, have you ever been to the flyover states or do you just spend all your time on the coasts? Cause I think we're pretty nice out here too. No, that's all really good stuff. You mentioned webinars before we started recording. Are those going to be publicly available? Are people going to be able to attend those webinars? Or?
So what I'm doing, I'm actually starting to work on it right now. I'm putting together, we've got hundreds and hundreds of pictures. I'm sorting through them, finding the ones that are the best to show some of the experiences we had and things that we learned. And my thoughts are going to be put together more succinctly than what I've done here. But I'm going to do a series of workshops or essentially presentations for ranchers that want to come. I do some local ones here in Wheatland and by invitation. So if you're a part of a group that wants to bring me out to share some of this stuff, I'd be glad to do it. And I've also I think the most valuable thing is I was brave enough to ask a lot of these folks to get in front of a video camera and tell me about, like Jim Lindsay talking about going through a drought for 6 years. I've got Rod Knight, who's on KLR Marketing, talking about how we decide when we buy animals and when we sell animals. And are these emotional decisions? How do we get away from that trap of making our marketing decisions based on emotion? I've got Graham Reese talking about succession and going through some difficult succession things with his family and how he dealt with that. So I want to edit all these videos together to bring, the highlights of those, bring the pictures in, do a couple of these live so I can run through it and get better at it. And then I'm going to host a webinar where I'll run through some of these pictures, videos, and we'll make that public. I'll record it. And, of course, it'd be fun to have people join me live while I'm doing it to ask questions and interact. But once we've done that, we'll record it and post it, and I'll be sure to share it with you, Clay.
Sure. Yeah, we'd love to either help promote that or get the word out about them after the fact. Whatever you want to do, just let me know, and we'll do that. Speaking of other continuing education options, how's the practicum coming together for June and on into the future? Is it June, August, September, November?
It is. Yeah, I think we go. The dates are on the website, and I'm actually embarrassed to say I don't know them off the top of my head. But I know we do start in the middle of June, and we wrap up in November. So we've got registrations are rolling in. In fact, we're more than half full. I would kind of expect that we'll fill up here before too long. So it's looking like we're getting another really good swath of ranchers from a wide area. I know we've got registrations from Montana, Wyoming, Nebraska, Colorado, and I'm pretty sure South Dakota are already on the list. So the classes are going to be held in Cheyenne this year, starting in June. And, you know, that's speaking of things I saw in Australia, and maybe it was that I was associating with and running around with, but the ranchers there, the graziers, as they call themselves, they weren't afraid to invest in their professional development for their business. And the tuition on the classes they were attending there, to go to a ranching for profit school in Australia is about $6,000. To go to a 2.5 day KLR marketing school is $2,500. That's just tuition. That doesn't include transportation, doesn't include lodging, doesn't include all your meals while you're there. And the classes I went to were full, and the people were excited to get in there, and they were saying, "What can we do next? What can we learn over here?" And you know, you start asking people, "Well, why are you coming to these?" So they said, "Well, we're a business, aren't we? And aren't people that are in business, don't they invest in their professional development?" And when you come over here and I talk to some ranchers and people say, "Well, what's your school cost?" And I'm like, "Well, it's $600, you know, for the ranch practicum school." "Oh, I can't afford that." And I think, "Well, thank goodness you're not going to come to the school." That's the response. Because you don't want those people in the class that aren't willing to invest. I mean, if it wasn't worth $600, is it not worth 6 days away or 8 days away from the business and all the travel it's going to take to get there and all the logic? So I don't know. It's just, to me, again, maybe it's just people I was running around with there, but the mindset of I'm a business, I'm going to invest in myself, I'm going to take time to make management decisions. We're not just going to be caught up in the day-to-day, that we don't have time to pull up, to look around and to say, what's going on here? Is this doing what we want it to do? Do we want more from this business? And how can we ask it to do more? So anyway, a little bit of a soapbox there, but if people are interested in doing some professional development on their ranch, the Ranch Practicum School is coming up starting in June, and you probably better get enrolled here in the next few weeks. Certainly when this gets aired, you might already be too late. But if not, pull us up on Google and look at hpranchpractum.com, call the office and see if we have room.
Yep. There will be links in the show notes page to all the things we talked about today, RCS Australia, KLR Marketing, the High Plains Ranch Practicum, and some of those other things will be linked there at workingcows.net/29. If you want to check out the show notes page for this episode, it is workingcows.net/29. Any other resources or links that you want to share, or anything else that we kind of, I know we left a lot on the table, but we're whetting appetites for future webinars.
All right. Sounds good. There is a bunch. Graham Reese of KLR Marketing is bringing about 20 ranchers, Australian graziers, over to do a tour of the States this summer. And they're going to be with me in Wheatland about 3 days, the first part of August. We're going to go over and see Shannon and Melinda Sims. I know Melinda was one of your interviewees. Spend a day with them. We're going to go look at some operations around here. Going to go up and see a sheep place north of Douglas. So these folks are going from Texas to Yellowstone and traveling up there in about a three-week trip exploring the U.S. So if you happen to be around and want to join us, I'm looking to bring some U.S. ranchers. They're going to be in Suburbans, and I want to have at least one rancher per Suburban to throw in with them while we do our driving around so they can get a local giving them the tour. So if you have a few days and want to come spend that with us, look me up and let's do that. And thinking about it down the road, we're going to put together a trip of U.S. ranchers at some point to go over to Australia and spend some time with them looking at their country.
Amazing opportunities. Sounds really great. And we will find a way to put you in touch with Dallas through the workingcows.net/29 site. So check out workingcows.net/29 for all those things. And I can tell you for a fact that I've already recouped the $600 I invested to go to the High Plains Ranch Practicum. And, I mean, the intangible benefits of the network that was developed in that room is above and beyond just the monetary benefits. So I can't say highly enough how much I think that is a great thing. I've talked about it before in previous advertisements that I did. Just I love the format where you get to go, have your mind blown, come home, digest, go back, get your mind blown again. You know, it gives you some time to really digest those things, and I just think it's a great program and a great design. And the guys that put it on have been great resources. Dallas and Aaron and Blake have been available through text message, email, phone call, all those things in the months since the I finished. So they are for real. They actually deliver on the things that they say in the class, and they've been great resources. So I can't endorse it strongly enough. It's worth the drive, definitely worth the drive. I drove 5 hours one way to get there with my wife, and I can recommend a really great Airbnb with four different kinds of beer on tap in the basement if you're looking for one. So I can't endorse it highly enough. So take the time to get there if you can.
Thanks, Clay. Appreciate that.
Sure. Thank you for your time today, Dallas.
You bet. Keep up the great work, and I'm a big fan of working cows.
Sounds good. Thanks. Well, I appreciate Dallas for coming on again and just giving us some insights that he gained from those opportunities. We will have links to any and all of Dallas's upcoming presentations at the show notes page for this episode, workingcows.net/29. Also, if you want to support the show, check out workingcows.net/29 for a link to that Amazon wish list. Thank you guys for tuning in. Next week, very excited to welcome to the show Steve Kenyon. Steve is a grazing expert and many other things, running Greener Pastures Ranching up in Canada. And we are going to talk to him about holistic parasite management and some of the other things. So really appreciate that opportunity. Join us next week for episode 30 of the Working Cows podcast with Steve Kenyon.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.